Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I am your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on April the 2nd, 2015, in the evening. Opening day is less than 4 full days away as we are listening to this, or as we're recording it, and as you're listening to it, it will be about 72 hours away. And I am joined tonight for the first time. You may have seen him writing for the Orioles blog, Orioles Nation, but he joined Camden Chat over the offseason. He is Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good tonight. How you doing yourself, Mark?
I am doing pretty well also. I am looking forward to there being real baseball because I've just had enough of spring training. I have had enough of ties. I have had enough of games where the seventh inning on is nothing but players with 80s and 90s jersey numbers who no one even knows who they are.
And the announcers just guess.
I don't get super into the Orioles minor leagues, but I at least tend to know the players' names. And then in spring training, they just throw at me guys even I have never heard of.
There was too much Chaz Rowe for my liking.
We had Chaz Rowe getting some appearances, and then you would get late in games, and there would be, like, Ozzy Martinez playing shortstop. And there was a Sean somebody I had never heard of before he started getting into some spring training games.
Yeah, that was the guy they picked up in the AAA portion
of
the draft.
Oh, was that right? Was that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, fun times.
I'd never heard that name before. I guess I might have seen his name if I saw that AAA Rule 5 draft thing, but
I had to Google it.
It's that's what you get at the end of spring training. So it's time for real baseball, and that's good.
Yes.
Because I'm not a fan of spring training. So Alex, do you have any opening day ritual that just no opening day is complete without you doing certain things?
Nothing too complex. I usually try to get the day off work. I'll pop my Orioles hat on, go preen out in the streets. And then I'm the kind of guy that likes to really sort of pay attention to the game. So I usually don't, go to a bar or anything like that and hang out with a bunch of people because they're not paying attention to the game. So it makes it harder for me. So I'll just pop down on my couch, get some cold beers, and just sort of sit back and pay attention and enjoy it all and welcome baseball back.
I kind of have the problem that of the people I know in real life, I am really the biggest Orioles and baseball fan among them. So it's, among my usual circle of people, I am always the most into the game unless I specifically have gone to the game with some Camden Chat friends, which is kind of fun sometimes because people just like ask me stuff. And then I get to feel like a know-it-all when I answer that. But then other times sure. I just want to sit there and watch the game and not have to like explain to my mom why someone is shifting.
Yeah. I have friends where I have to explain the rules of baseball to them and what a hit means and stuff like that. And I ain't got time for that.
It's definitely a different experience if I have to fulfill that role. But my opening day ritual is pretty much just wear an Orioles shirt and go as many places as I can in public. And just so everybody knows it's opening day and this guy is excited for the Orioles. I don't even necessarily talk to people and try and be like, yeah, man, Orioles. I'm out there. I'm wearing my orange. Probably my Iback the Bird shirt from 2012 is probably my standby of my current lineup of recent years' giveaway shirts, and I'm just as many places as I can go, I go, and I make sure everybody knows. What is it, a 3:10 first pitch? So I'll probably find an excuse to go to the grocery store and eat lunch out, and I don't know, buy some beer. That's pretty much my opening day ritual, and then I will return to be watching the Masson broadcast. Hopefully, we'll get treated to Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer on opening day.
I feel like they gotta bust out the A-team for
opening
day.
You gotta have the A-team for opening day. Not that I don't disparage the other combinations of broadcasters because they all have their positive qualities. But Gary and Jim is
Yeah, they're the best.
Is as good as you're gonna get.
Yeah,
And
I mean, if you even see like the national publications ranking broadcasters, those two are like top five a lot of the times.
the one guy doing that recently that I remember was the Sporting News Jesse Spector, and I'm pretty sure he
Yeah.
had Gary Thorne and Jim, unless I'm going crazy. Let's see if I can
You get them two or three or something, maybe. They're
Find
good.
this on Google as we're recording. But yeah, I love them, and nothing has made me appreciate Orioles announcers more than experiencing some other teams' broadcasts throughout spring training. Now, some of that was radio rather than TV, but
I watched one TV. It was the early on. I was watching on MLB Network, and it was the Twins TV broadcast, and they were dreadful. I mean, they were like almost had never seen a baseball game before bad.
I
But
had the misfortune of listening to a Pirates broadcast during spring training that was a radio broadcast, and they decided as kind of a gimmick, I guess because that was the radio station they were on, they were having this radio station's morning show guys come in and do an inning of the game.
yeah.
And this turned into the longest inning of the game was like that inning. I think it was the third inning. And these two guys who had never called a baseball game before in their lives, like, I mean, they at least knew what baseball was. It wasn't like they were total whatever, but it was just no training whatsoever. And they got stuck with like a 20-minute top of the third because the Orioles got four runs or something like that. It was, it makes you appreciate, Joe Angel and Fred Manfred all the more, and certainly Gary and Jim.
Yeah.
So that was a thing that happened. But anyway, opening day, the Orioles, they're going to be back, and here's hoping it's going to be another good year. I feel like it's maybe a little bit too much to hope for repeating the AL East title, although I don't think it's impossible. They're going to need some stuff to go right to do it, but they needed that last year, and a lot of those things went right last year. So, I mean, if it happened once, why not again?
Yeah.
As spring training draws to a close, first we're going to have to find out who's even going to be on the Orioles because there's a number of interesting position battles that are like starting off with who's even going to be in the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean it's crowded, and it's crowded with a lot of guys that don't have the minor league options. So there's either going to be some trades or there's going to be some people on the roster that might not deserve it right away. But regardless, there's going to be a lot of turmoil in that bullpen. If not, come Sunday, come the first couple weeks of the season.
And of course, just Thursday, we lost one of that crowded bullpen crowd. One of the Rule 5 picks, Logan Verrett, got claimed by the Rangers on waivers. And that was probably because the Orioles were trying to pass him through waivers to make a trade with the Mets so that they could keep Verrett and option him to the minors.
Yeah.
But that didn't work. And in fact, I think if I'm remembering right, their waiver priority would have been stay in the AL and worst record, so the Texas Rangers was actually the first team that could have possibly claimed him.
Yeah,
So he
F.
didn't even get past one team.
No.
Of course, Alex, you had an interesting observation on Twitter earlier, and only in baseball would you need to trade another team to get a player who's already on your team.
Yeah, I mean, the Rule 5 draft is just, I mean, it's almost nonsense. I try to explain it to people that don't know baseball, and it's just, I don't even know what I'm saying.
There's no equivalent in any other sport. Like you can't even draw a comparison because it's its own thing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to trade for a guy that's already on your own team. It's just, what are you talking about? Like, oh, it's a mess.
So
And I think it's interesting because I figured Verrett would be the guy they try to keep on the roster all year
I thought
over
so too,
Garcia.
because I thought it would be easier to keep him if they used him in the TJ McFarland long relief role and then just sent TJ McFarland to Norfolk.
Yeah.
Because they've already proven they can stash that kind of player on the roster.
Yeah. And so if they're trying to try to stash Garcia, I mean, it'd be surprising for a guy who never pitched above, high A. To keep him in the bullpen. I guess he's looked really good and they like him a lot. And, he's got that electric fastball, but seems like that's a guy that's harder to keep around.
The Orioles just really want to get something out of their fantastic story of how they even knew who Jason Garcia was in the first place. Because if for those of you out there, there was, if you haven't read, there was an article on Fangraphs by Kylie McDaniel where he was talking about the Orioles farm system. And it turned out the story of how they got Jason Garcia, that they even knew about him, is that he had pitched some games for the Gulf Coast League Red Sox for some reason, and the Orioles are one of a few teams that actually had video of those games. And so the Orioles had video of Jason Garcia when he was pitching, even though he had never been above high A before. So they were like, they saw that and they were like, well, we got to go out of our way to get him. Because he wasn't even the Orioles' Rule 5 pick. The Orioles paid the Astros to pick Jason Garcia, and then they traded him to the Orioles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they went out of their way to make sure they got Jason Garcia.
Yeah. Which makes you think, you know, from watching and paying attention to the way Duquette manages his roster, is that you try to keep him around. But, I mean, if you try to keep Garcia from the get-go, you're talking about, you know, kicking out a veteran who's, you know, done it at the major league level before. And I'm not sure if he's going to want to do that either. So,
yeah, you're pretty much talking about, I feel like it's going to come down to probably two of people who were in last year's bullpen are going to be displaced, because it looks like, frustratingly enough, Kevin Gausman could be destined to be the long man as the season begins.
Yeah, he's either going to be the long man or in AAA, which will probably make Orioles fans angry regardless of what happens.
I mean, it's frustrating just that that's happening, because I feel like Gausman, and I feel like they have to know Gausman is one of their five best pitchers, but
yeah.
They're just deciding to avail themselves of other ways of things going on, even though. And I mean, you know, we don't really have any reason to doubt Dan Duquette, seeing as the Orioles haven't had a losing season since he arrived. But it's still, individual decisions can be puzzling and frustrating until the grand design is revealed in time.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like you said, he's one of the best five. You know, he should be there, but, you know, it's hard to make a case for him over a lot of the guys when you start, you know, thinking about it. And even though the money's guaranteed to Ubaldo, so regardless of what you do with him, you're still paying him. You know, I guess they're going to try to see if he can have a shot at, you know, resembling a major league level pitcher this year.
And, I mean, he has looked better as spring has gone along. And, of course, spring training is only worth so much. But he looked pretty crappy at first after – well, okay. So the Ubaldo progression in spring training was, when the pitchers reported it, was, oh, my God, he looks so great in these bullpen sessions.
Yeah,
this is great.
Like everyone does.
And then his first game, like, didn't he walk, like, four guys in two innings or something ridiculous?
One, gave up, like, seven runs. Just awful. Just –
and
so everything was awful.
His second start was also pretty awful.
Yeah.
And then since then, he's done pretty well. So I don't know where that leaves you on the aggregate, but it's certainly better to have the good games towards the end of spring than the beginning.
Just watching him pitch and watching the movement on his pitches and some of the swings he's able to get out of people, you could see how he could be one of the better pitchers on the roster, one of the better starters. But if you can't throw strikes, then you're not going to make it. And if he can't throw strikes with his fastball and get people to swing over the top of that splitter, then, you know, back at the same place we were last year, where, you know, the only way they're going to hide him on the roster is if he hits another pothole.
I had a ridiculous made-up theory that Dan Duquette personally took a jackhammer and made that pothole. At first, I thought it was like in the players' parking lot at Camden Yards, but I think
that would be
the story
better.
Was actually it was at his apartment complex. So I'm just imagining Duquette in a hard hat, like while the game is going on, some game, and he knows where Ubaldo parks, and he just makes a pothole next to where he would get out of the driver's side. No, I don't actually think that happened, but that's what I kind of imagined.
Wouldn't surprise me.
You
so,
can't
yeah,
totally
I mean...
rule it out either. This is the same guy who made Ryan Flaherty go on the disabled list for tonsillitis that he was supposed to miss two games for.
Yeah, two games, tonsillitis, and then a 20-day rehab assignment at AAA just so he could keep him for the the whatever rest of the time. That's playoff hero Ryan Flaherty.
That is playoff hero Ryan Flaherty. He has two playoff home runs, which is more than Adam Jones has. Although the Orioles lost both games he homered, if I recall correctly. He homered in one of the Royals games, and of course they got swept there, and I believe he homered in game three of the ALDS, which was also known as the Raul F. and Ibanez game.
Yeah, Voldemort.
Lord Voldemort, indeed. But as far as Ubaldo is concerned, I mean, there is a reason why the Orioles gave him the largest contract they've ever given a free agent pitcher. And as frustrating as it was to watch him last year, like, you know, they're not dumb, and they gave him that for a reason. We just didn't see that reason last year.
He had probably one of the five best pitched games by a starter last year. I mean, it was against, I know it was in Minnesota, and he went like seven innings, walked one, gave up like three hits, and struck out 10 people. I mean, that's a dominating start.
Like, how often do we see an Orioles starter get double digit strikeouts? It hasn't happened in some time.
And when he can get the fastball going where he thinks it's going to go, you know, he can do that to people because the stuff is there. The velocity isn't there anymore, but the movement, I mean, is crazy on all his pitches. And so, you know, he could be one of the better starters on the team. It just seems so unlikely after watching him last year.
Yeah, so the game you were talking about happened on May the 2nd last year, but then you had games like second start he made against the Yankees in the season, and he walked five in 4 2/3 innings.
I think he led the league in walks last year, even after missing, like...
Yeah, despite only throwing
large swaths.
125 and a third innings, he had 77 walks, which is ridiculous. 5.5 walks per nine is...
Oh, God.
That's bad.
That's really bad. But, yeah, so, I mean, but I don't see him going to the bullpen. And, you know, the only other option for him, if you want him off the roster, is to cut him. I don't see that happening.
No.
And so, you mean, if you want Garcia, you want Gausman, you want these people in the bullpen, I mean, you're talking about cutting or trading Mattis, Webb, Wright, Brock, and all those guys. I mean, Webb wasn't great last year, but he's got a decent track record. You know, Mattis frustrates Orioles fans, but... You know, he's good at what he does.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's a reason why he was the number four overall pick also. And I guess the Orioles had been hoping as they had him make a couple starts in spring training, they could sell a team on that potential, but that doesn't seem to have been the case.
No, given that
the Mets decided to trade for two random lefties instead of Mattis.
Yeah.
Maybe the Orioles were asking for too much, but...
Yeah. I saw a report out of Chicago that... the Mets or the Cubs and the Orioles have been talking about a Mattis for Wellington Castillo swap, but apparently that the Cubs had turned it down on their end, which says a lot about, you know, you figure the Cubs will take some Orioles pitcher and turn him into a stud like they did with the rest of their guys. But they didn't even want Mattis. So I think a lot of teams around the league can't envision him being a starter. And if he's a guy that's only going to get lefties out, maybe you got to try to go somewhere else in the bullpen.
And, of course, earlier in the offseason, the Orioles, I think, were trying to interest the Pirates in taking Brian Mattis for Travis Snyder.
Yeah.
And while they did get Travis Snyder in the end, it obviously wasn't for Mattis.
Yeah, the Pirates didn't want a $3.5 million loogie.
As well they shouldn't have, because, really, like, it's not a luxury a team with less budget can really go with.
No.
Especially since last year he wasn't even as good at being a loogie as he had been.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, at times watching him this spring, it looks like, you know, he's got that slider working a little bit better, and then, you know, he just leaves one on the middle of the plate for a right-handed hitter, and they hit it 500 feet, and you're just like, oh, God, why are you still pitching?
Like those two starts he made, he looked pretty good. I mean, it was like, wow, where is this guy? Why haven't we seen him in 5 years of his big league career?
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, maybe he figured it out or figured something out, but it just doesn't seem likely at this point. He just doesn't really have
what was the
stuff.
Thing? They were talking about he started taking blood pressure medicine this off season, and now he's sleeping better.
It's something weird. I mean, you know, all this stuff always pops up. Like, you know, Chris Davis's oblique injury has now like been one of the main stories of spring training, and I don't remember hearing about anything about that last year.
No, that was why he was on the disabled list. But then,
but he came back.
So why did they bring him back if he wasn't healthy? Probably my number one concern for the season, the team this year, is can Chris Davis rebound the way he thinks? I mean,
I think, you know, even if they get a 2012 Davis out of him, I think it'll be good for the team. Something like hitting 260, around 30 home runs kind of guy. I mean, I don't think he'll put up another 200 season. But I don't think he's ever going to be 2013 Chris Davis again.
Yeah, I would certainly.
Contract year.
I would take 33 homers again.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
That's true. Hoping for that contract year. I'm hoping for Matt Wieters getting the contract year. I just kind of have this feeling he's going to put together the contract year of all contract years, Matt Wieters. I would like to be right about that. Maybe he won't, but it just seems like he's kind of been steadily putting together things, and now it'll be, well,
he started off last season so great, especially from the right side, which he had struggled with a lot, or from the left side, sorry. But he was starting off, he was doing great, and then that Tommy John. But, you know, if he can replicate that, be good for the Orioles in 2015 at least.
Probably 2015 only, because I just don't think he's coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know that I want him to come back. I mean, I would be sad that he wasn't on Orioles anymore, because much like Nick Markakis, where I just remember, like, you know, being hyped for him as a prospect, and I went to Wieters' debut. I went out of my way to go to Wieters' debut because what was it? Like, they announced it on the Masson broadcast, like on a Tuesday, that they would call him up on a Friday against the Tigers, and it was like already a sold out game because it was Union Night and Fireworks Night or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds right. And they had,
And it was rainy before the game, right? And then there was a rainbow over the warehouse the first time Matt Wieters took the field. That actually happened. I mean, like, the fact that he will probably be somewhere else after being a free agent is a little sad, having gone through all that. But, I mean, that's probably for the best in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, how many more years is he going to be able to catch even?
Right, like, he's been an extremely durable catcher in his time with the Orioles, but that means he's accumulated just a ridiculous number of innings. Like, he caught over 1,000 innings in 2010 through 2013, culminating in 1,201 innings behind the plate in 2013, which is really a lot.
And, that's
he's going to be 29 in May. And so, you know, his next contract is going to be on the wrong side of 30 mostly. So,
yeah,
you got to be careful about that.
You do. And, you know, if he ever has to move off the behind, like, you know, off the catcher position and like to first base, he just instantly loses the vast majority of his value.
Right. He hasn't hit well enough to be like, okay, this guy can be your first baseman or this guy can be your DH. Now, I guess you could argue, well, maybe if he's not catching, he will, you know, be less dinged up and he will hit better. But that's for whatever team that signs
that
him, it's going to be
32 years old.
Yeah, it's going to be a big gamble for whatever team ends up signing him.
Yeah, but you're probably right. I don't think it's going to be the Orioles at this point.
I mean, whatever they have 11 pending free agents. I just expect probably not more than two of them will be back.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is a season preview podcast, but this off season is going to be really interesting.
I mean, it's certainly going to be an ongoing story this season because it's going to be this. Is it going to be this last hurrah season, or, you know, with this group? And it might be that. So hopefully, it's a good last hurrah.
Exactly.
I mean, of course, not everybody that's an Orioles fan is a Ravens fan, but just a couple seasons ago, we kind of had the Ray Lewis last ride season, and then they won the Super Bowl, and that was pretty awesome. But, you know, then they were a very different team the next year, and they couldn't keep so many of these key players, or some of them were retiring or whatever. And, you know, the Orioles of 2016 will look different than they do this year, and that will be something that kind of we'll be thinking about as the season goes along. But hopefully not too much, because hopefully it's an awesome 2015 to distract us in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, Davis and Weeders themselves are going to be important parts of having that be a good season, I think, if that's going to happen.
They're both going to need to be, you know, healthy and the better versions of themselves if the Orioles want to repeat as division champs.
Along with Manny Machado coming back from his second knee surgery in as many seasons.
Very true.
Because, of course, through the offseason where the Orioles didn't do a heck of a lot, you would have Dan Duquette giving quotes like, well, you know, we're about to get three all-star players back from things that were ailing them last year. And so, that's like getting three free agents, but they're guys they already had.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's true.
It's an optimistic take that could prove to be true, but it also could prove to not be true, and then they'll be in a bit of trouble, although the Orioles managed to do okay without Weeders at catcher last year, and maybe they could do that again, but I wouldn't want to see them spend half a season or more trying to replace Machado and Davis's production.
Yeah.
That would make it not as fun of a summer.
I thought they were lost when Manny went down last year. I mean, they managed to get out by him, but without him. But you know, he's so good at holding down third, and his offensive game was just coming around. And you know, if he can do that again, that would just be another. Yeah, like you know, like we said, if you're going to be optimistic about all those guys who missed time last year, be a huge boon to the team.
I mean, they won 96 games last year, and it wasn't even the best version of the Orioles.
Yeah.
Like I probably said it, you know, people were sick of it, but just like if you were going to imagine a successful Orioles team the way they succeeded last year, but then you would say all of these things happened. Oh, but Chris Davis is going to bat below the Mendoza line. Oh, but Manny Machado is going to need another knee surgery. Oh, yeah, and Matt Weeters is going to need Tommy John surgery. You're going to be like, okay, we're going back to winning 70 games. Ah, man. Well, you know, maybe they'll get healthy and we'll do it again the next year. But then they won 96 games, and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So will those guys coming back lift them, you know, to kind of compensate for some of the things that just aren't going to be as good just because it's so unlikely that they can be duplicated? And some of that is like, you know, is Steve Pierce going to be as good? Well, probably not. And some of that is like, if you look in the bullpen, Zach Britton and Darren O'Day were just so good. It's almost impossible they could be that good again. Like even if they're good, they can't be that good. They can't be that good. Just like,
you know, it's
they can't.
Yeah, it's like it's like those three guys, you know, like Pierce, O'Day, Britton, you know, well, like they lost Cruz, but like those guys were so good for them last year. Like they just, even if, you know, they could have basically played the same as they did last year, and just the results would be worse almost because they just have to be. But, you know, again, if you can, you know, you look optimistically at it all, you can look pessimistically at it all, you know, there's, well, I don't think they have as wide of a variance as some of the teams in the division. I think, you know, they could be a pretty average team or they could be a pretty good team once again. If more things break right than break wrong.
I try to avoid making predictions because they make me look stupid, but I staked my reputation on 89 win season for the Orioles this year, which long-time listeners of Cam and Cast do know how pessimistic I am. You probably can appreciate it. It actually pained me to pick a number that high. I've predicted the Orioles record on Cam and Cast every year. This is probably what this will be the fifth year now, I guess, and that's the highest number I've ever picked, and it really it pained me because if I'm wrong, it's going to pain me to be wrong, but also that the Orioles, you know, if they fell way short of that, I'm going to be like, man, I was a moron and I thought they were going to win 89 games, and then if they win like 79, I'm going to be like, man, why was I a moron?
yeah. I mean, 89 seems just about right in that wheelhouse, though, of like reasonable. And, you know, but you never know. It's so hard.
It's counting on a lot of the stuff that made them good last year being mostly as good. Like the defense, you need them to be as good, which, I mean, hopefully they will be. It still should be a top-flight infield defense, for instance. So that's going to be good for Zach Britton, who got a ground ball, according to Fangraphs, 75.3% of the time last year, which It's really absurd. Like, if you don't look at baseball statistics in deep detail all the time, you maybe don't appreciate. Like, people will call a ground ball pitcher if they're getting a ground ball at like 50% of the time, and they'll say, "Oh man, he's really a ground ball pitcher," and here's Zach Britton, 75.3%. This is really ridiculous. So that's good when you have an infield, and your infield is like Jonathan Scope and J.J. Hardy and Manny Machado. That's good news.
Yes. Very good news. And I actually think, you know, you could definitely argue that their outfield defense will be better this year. You know, still with the mainstay Jones in center, but, you know, Deaza and Snyder and Pierce are, you know, might, you know, if it, Nelson Cruz played a lot of games in left field last year, and Nelson Cruz is not a particularly good fielder.
And we're hopefully going to see less of Delman Young out there as well.
Yes. Yes, hopefully. They seem to have added a lot of outfielders, and if Delman Young sees the outfield grass, I'm not sure why.
Well, you can see the outfield grass from home plate, right? Or when you're running the bases, so that'd be okay. But we don't want him to be standing on the outfield
grass. No, he can't touch it. Yeah. He can't touch it.
No, don't leave the infield dirt. Unless he's running past first base up foul territory, I guess, then maybe you could touch the outfield grass.
That's
about the only situation. Rounding third, well, even rounding third to home, you won't be on the outfield grass per se. You'd be just on different grass. but no, I like Delman Young. I don't want to see him in the field very much.
No, he's not fun to watch in the field.
Now, it's certainly possible that one of the injuries late in spring training is opening up a chance for us to see less of Delman Young in the field, and that it would be in this way. David Lowe, if we assume he was going to be the fourth outfielder, and now that he's hurt, the Orioles will have to make other plans. So maybe that will mean longtime Camden Chat favorite, longtime Mark Brown favorite also, Nolan Reimold, will make it onto the roster. And obviously he's not just going to be your fourth outfielder because he's probably not a center fielder. But if you have Reimold on there, then maybe you don't have Young in left field so much. And that would be okay with me.
Yeah, and honestly, it'd be okay with me too. You know, Reimold's shown good patience this spring. He's got the speed. He's still got a little pop in the bat.
Deceptively fast runner, Nolan Reimold.
Yeah. I heard an interview with him the other day. He's like, yeah, I'm tall, so it makes me fast. Okay. I'll take your word for it.
If only it was that easy.
Yeah. But, you know, I think he's, you know, and being right-handed, it gives you, if you have Snyder and Deaza, and then Reimold and Pierce, you can sort of get that strict platoon going against, you know, the left-handers. You start Pierce in right field, Reimold in left, and then against the right-handers, you do Deaza in left and Snyder in right. And so you get those platoon advantages, which, you know, basically, you know, all these players that the Orioles have, if you're playing them every day, they might not be, you know, the best players to play every day. But if you put them in their own situations to succeed, you know, even someone like Delman Young, they can all be valuable pieces to the team. And, you know, there was an interesting article last year. I think Jeff Sullivan wrote it on FanGraphs.
I love Jeff Sullivan. I just want to get that out there.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. But he was talking about, like, the one thing the Orioles were good at is avoiding the non-zero roster spot. You know, they had the least amount of negative war players on their roster. I think that at one point they had none, essentially. Whereas like a lot of teams, they'll have bench spots and stuff like that where it's players that are actually a negative.
Right, or you shuffle through like five crappy relievers that get DFA'd before you find somebody who works or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, when you're able to, like, you know, Delman Young isn't the best baseball player in the world, but he's got a swing that is made for pinch hitting. And if you use him like that, you use him against a lefty in a right spot, you know, he's going to be a valuable player for you. He might not be the best person to run out in right field 162 times, but that's not what they're asking him to do. And you could say that about, you know, a lot of other guys on their team.
Yeah, like, I mean, Steve Pierce, he only had 383 plate appearances last year, and he still homered 21 times, which is awesome. You know, that's a little bit more than half of a full season's worth of plate appearances. Because what if you play in every game, you're probably getting 720 or something like that if you're high up in the batting order.
Yeah. I mean, he was great. You know, he was, you know, exceptional against lefties, exceptional against righties. You know, he made that switch in his batting stance where he closed it off a little bit. He said that helped him sort of see the inside pitch a little better. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think Steve Pearce is still going to be what he was before last year, which is, you know, a righty who can crush fastballs and who can crush lefties. And, you know, that's a good guy to have on your bench, especially one that can play left field, right field, and first base. You know, that positional versatility is great.
Alex, something you were saying to me before we had this recording going is that Steve Pearce was actually the second best hitter against fastballs in all of baseball.
Yeah.
I looked that one up on FanGraphs, and it is true that Steve Pearce was worth 26 runs above average against the fastball.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's really crazy.
It's, you know, he can hit a fastball. And I've talked with the old site I wrote for Orioles Nation, the old whatever managing editor, or whatever you want to say, boss man was Tucker Blair. He's a scout for Baseball Prospectus now. You know, that's what he always told me about Steve Pearce. He will hit a fastball. And if you're going to hit one pitch, hitting a fastball is a pretty good one. So, you know, if he can lay off the bad breaking balls, you know, I think he'll still be a good player next year, you know, in this year. I mean, if used correctly, I think all these players will add up to more than if you just use them all separately, basically.
I mean, has kind of been one of the hallmarks of the Dan Duquette tenure of the Orioles, and one thing that I think is puzzling to national media people who only look at the Orioles every so often. I mean, I've watched, I don't know that I've watched every inning 100% of the time in the last 3 years, but I've watched a substantial majority of them. I watch a lot of Orioles baseball, and I don't even know how they do it sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same boat with you. I probably watch 140 to 150 games a year.
I think I've been to about 25 games in person each of the last three seasons, and, you know, I'm watching pretty much all the rest on Masson, or at least listening to them on the radio, and I mean, I don't know how it happens sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's surely an explanation or a series of explanations, but I don't know them, and I don't even know if the Orioles know them. I mean, some of it is just you kind of have a plan, and then you get really lucky.
Yeah, yeah, and I, you know, at times it seems like, oh, you know, they're good at acquiring all this depth, and at times it just seems like, well, they're just churning through as many players as they can get until they get one that's hot for a little bit and stick with him until he's not hot, and then get the next guy in there. And I'm not sure how much of a plan that really is.
Like, I mean, if you go back to 2012, it's like, okay, well, assembling a bunch of cast-offs and eventually one of them became Nate McClouth was, you know, was pretty lucky.
Yeah.
Because you could have just as easily cycled through five of those guys and none of them were any good. So some of them was like, well, they got lucky. But then some of them, you know, then you had something they did where it was very bold to call up Manny Machado at the point they did in 2012. And, I mean, that was like the crucial juncture of the season was when they really launched. And it wasn't entirely because of Machado, but it sure didn't hurt that suddenly they had, like, the best third baseman in defense instead of Wilson Betemead and Mark Reynolds over there.
Wilson Betemead. Oh, man.
Like, because the 2012 Orioles of September were not the 2012 Orioles of April, which is good because, you know, they weren't a playoff team in April of 2012.
No.
But, you know, in August and September, they were.
I was texting with a buddy the other day. He sent me his status from opening day 2012. It was, glad my favorite pitcher, Jake Arrieta, is the opening day starter. And I completely forgot that he was the opening day starter in 2012.
Like, it seems ridiculous because 2012 was such a great year. So how could Jake Arrieta have been the opening day starter? We had a longtime Camden Chat commenter. His name is Dan O'Hare. And he famously predicted before the 2012 team started that the Orioles would win 90 games or more. I mean, you make that prediction in, like, March the 15th of 2012. That was a crazy thing to do. And we all gave him a hard time about it. And it turned out he was right. But, I mean, the Orioles team that took the field on opening day 2012 was not going to win 90 games. And that was the whole point, is through the year, they improved. You know, they called up Miguel Gonzalez, the gem the diamond in the rough from the Mexican League, and they resurrected Nate McLaws for a little while. They got Machado in there. You know, it was a constant improvement. And if there's one thing you can say about Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter, and they talk about it, they're doing everything they can every day to make sure the best Orioles team is on the field.
Yeah, and you know, you see that to like the most minute of details, you know, where they dig up the roster rules from the bowels of the CBA.
The arcana that allows them to keep Steve Pierce, because they talked about that on, I don't remember what game, but it was before, they got during an O's Extra pregame before some game last year, and they talked to the guy. I don't recall his name. It might have been Ned Rice or something. It might have been a different guy. It was one of the front office people who's not Dan Duquette. And he just had his thick binder of like the CBA, and he like pointed to the page, and it was like, okay. So they had just designated Steve Pierce for assignment, which ordinarily would mean they couldn't sign him for a certain length of time. And but it turned out that if you played with a 24-man roster for one game, or maybe it was two games, then there was an exception, and you could bring back the guy you had just DFA'd. So, of course, right after they DFA'd Pierce was when Davis got hurt. So, apparently, they found this, and Duquette went to Buck, and he was like, okay, can you play a man down for two games, or one game, or something? And Buck was like, sure, if it means we keep Steve Pierce. And then, so they played a man short for two games, which I don't even think I noticed.
Yeah,
which is
probably
weird,
not.
Because you'd think, you know, that would be something that would stand out, but I don't remember noticing it at the time. And accordingly, they did that, and now they were eligible to re-sign Steve Pierce, which was good, because the Toronto Blue Jays, you may recall, also wanted to sign Steve Pierce.
Yeah.
But since the Orioles wanted him back, he told them no thanks, he was just going to stay in Baltimore, which was a very fatefully good decision for the Orioles' sake. Not that we knew it at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine it came down to as much as he didn't want to move to Toronto in the middle of the season as any
yeah.
other thing. But whatever it was, that was a very good decision for the Orioles.
Yes, it was.
And I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're doing all the time. They're trying to figure that out every day. Although, it sure seems like they're going to have a lot less flexibility, especially in the bullpen this year.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they really aren't going to be able to option anybody other than Gausman.
Yeah, Gausman and... Or, I mean, long shot sort of bullpen people at this point seem to be like Norris and Gonzalez. They got all those guys have options, but, you know.
I don't think Norris can get optioned even if they wanted
to.
But
does he have,
Gonzalez
yeah,
can.
5 years, right?
Gonzalez can, but it's hard to imagine them doing that. Because, I mean, why would you have Miguel Gonzalez in AAA at this point? You know what he is, and you know you want him somewhere on the big league team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I assume him and Gausman will probably be optioned up and down from Norfolk just to get bullpen guys in here and there probably all year long. But,
that's what it seems like. And I mean, you know, if you've got six guys that can start and you can shuffle a couple of them, that certainly helps you. Maybe that's
yeah.
part of the plan for the Orioles this year, is they have a grand design to do that through the year, and that'll be how they make the most of their roster. I don't know. If that is the plan, I hope it works.
Coming down to it, you know, the roster 25-man's got to be set Sunday, I think. I mean, going to have to see some DFAs or some trades here soon, I think.
Yeah, because there's a few people that need to make the 25-man, or they have to go through waivers, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. People like Brad Brock,
yeah.
Mattis, Webb, Wesley Wright, like those guys.
And then, of course, there's the added wrinkle that one person will be optioned or DFA'd after game one because they're
yeah.
Chris Davis back. I mean, how do you think it feels? You make the roster, and then someone sits there, and he knows he's gone the next day.
Yeah, you know he's gone.
You think they're going to tell him that? Will that person know who he is, or will there be like three guys sitting there kind of thinking, man, am I going to be the guy? That's kind of got to suck. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe it doesn't suck, because that's one more day than I'm ever going to be on a big league roster. But
get that $100 per day meal per diem.
Yeah, I would rather know I was going to stick around, I think.
Yeah, you know, I just feel that Duquette's going to be too tempted to mess with that roster spot.
I have a feeling it will be a guy who he thinks might not clear waivers on Sunday, but might clear waivers on Tuesday, because...
Yeah.
I feel like for the most part, teams, once they set their guys, they're not going to want to most GMs aren't going to want to then kick somebody out for a random waiver claim.
Yeah. I think that's might going to be like where you see like a Jimmy Paredes kind of guy who makes it for the first game, then gets shipped to Norfolk until they need somebody. Hopefully.
I think that seems like a good prediction. We'll see if that's the guy. It seems like that kind of player who they need to pass through waivers to keep, and therefore they might feel like they have a better chance of keeping him. So our time is kind of winding down here. One thing I even wanted to get through that we haven't hit on yet is, can the starting rotation be as good this year? It's kind of going to be an important question.
Definitely. I mean,
and I don't know. That's a tough one to ask.
At this point, you know, I think, you know, when you're looking at the guys, I think Wei-Yin Chen is kind of what he is, and he's what he is pretty good. You know, good lefty. And I think the same with Tillman, you know. I think Tillman at this point, it deserves a little credit for being a consistent pitcher. At least, you know, start to start, maybe not so consistent, especially early on last year. But, you know, at the end of the season.
Those games where he didn't make it out of the second inning.
I know.
I was at one of those because it was the second game of a double. It was the second game of a twi-night doubleheader against the Pirates. And there was already a rain delay in between the games. And then Tillman came out for the second game and just didn't get out of the second inning, I don't think. And that was a long night. And then it ended after midnight in extra innings. And that was a long day at Camden Yards. I was there for both of those games.
Was that the Wieters?
Wieters hit the walk-off, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he ripped it right down right field line. I remember that one. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I could see even a step forward with Tillman. Like, if he was able to sort of cut out those clunkers, he would be even a better pitcher than he was.
Even with those one inning outings, he threw 206 innings, I think. So like that's pretty crazy to overcome those two really bad outings to still cross over.
And you know, someone like that, someone like Tillman, he can get you like the 3.235 ERA for 200 innings. I mean, that's a valuable person to have. And you know, it seemed like what the Orioles had last year was basically five or six of those guys.
Other than Ubaldo, all the starters were under a 4 ERA, which, I mean, we try and blank the bleak years out of our memory. But, like, it might have been before the 2011 season I was on this very podcast, and I asked my former podcasting partner in crime, Andrew Gibson, if we would even have one Orioles starter with an ERA under 4. And it was, at that time, almost unfathomable to look forward to a future where the Orioles had five starters with ERAs under 4. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. It's good.
Yeah.
But it's not many teams can pull that off.
No. And while maybe you have no top-level ace, best pitcher in the league type guy, you got five guys that are above league average. And when you can do that, you know, the Orioles didn't put together like a really long winning streak last season at any point. You know, it was just sort of they would win, you know, 7, 6, 7, 8 out of 10. And they would just keep doing that and keep doing that. And that's what you get when you have five starting pitchers going to go out and give you an above league average performance when you have a pretty good offense and a top level defense.
The longest winning streak was 6 games, and that only happened in September.
Yeah, and I mean, that's 6 games is a pretty short winning streak.
As those things go, it is pretty short.
Yeah.
But their longest losing streak was 4 games, so...
Exactly.
They kept it... in fact, they were above... They were 500 or better every month, if we count March and April together. They were 11-12 in April, but they were 1-0 in March, so 12-12 March-April.
Yeah.
So they were never below 500 in a month, pretty much.
Yeah, I remember it was post All-Star break, and they're going like into Oakland, to LA to play the Angels, then to Seattle, and then like back home to play Oakland and LA and Seattle again. It was like 16 in a row, and I was so worried about how they were gonna do because the AL West at that point was just like beastly.
I remember that very stretch, and I was like, man, this is really where we're going to find out what this team is. And
they went 10-6, you know.
That was the key. Yeah. I mean, that was where they made their move.
Yeah. you know, and, you know, that's what they were able to do, especially in the second half, was just depend on those guys being above average. And, you know, maybe you see a backslide from some of them, but, you know, hopefully, you know, the hope, I think, for Dan Duquette and for Royals fans and everywhere is, you know, your guys in your minor leagues are the guys that can come up and give you the above league average innings. So if anyone falters or gets injured, you know, maybe like someone who Tyler Wilson, who showed himself well this year in spring training, can come up and give you that league average performance.
Right. You're looking at the Wilson or the Mike Wright or the Zach Davies class of pitcher if needed, which hopefully they're not needed, but they're there if they might be.
But, you know, if Bud Norris isn't as good as he was last year, you know, the hope, the plan should be that, you know, Tyler Wilson can be that guy, or, you know, whoever AAA starter can be that guy. And so I think, you know, the Orioles have got, you know, a decent starting pitching depth in that they're not dependent on one or two guys at all, you know, maybe Tillman. But after that, you know, if they lose a guy here or there, they can plug in a guy here and there and be all right.
Yeah, it's not like there's look up north a little bit to the Yankees, where they're really heavy on Masahiro Tanaka's elbow, not fraying. Farther or whatever. Because what did he get? Like the platelet-rich plasma injections, and it was only a 10% tear and rehabbed. Like, I mean, so obviously he hasn't gotten hurt through spring, but man, that just seems like a ticking time bomb. I wouldn't feel good if I was a Yankees fan. Well, if I was a Yankees fan, I wouldn't feel good anyway, because I would just have the darkness in my soul, and that would be, I would be a terrible, you know, but like, so taking that out of consideration, I wouldn't be looking forward to what might happen with Tanaka with just that disaster seeming to loom.
Yeah. And the Orioles just, they don't have a pitcher like that. You know, they don't have a pitcher where if you lost him, it would be the end, which like it was for the Yankees last year in Tanaka. You know, they were very good in games he started and pretty average in the games he didn't. And once he went down, they were pretty average for the rest of the year.
Just Thursday on the site, I had an article about the Orioles rotation versus the rest of the AL East. And so the Orioles only used 7 starters last year, and one of those was TJ McFarland, who only started 1 game.
Yeah.
That's 6 pitchers go 161 games combined, which is really good continuity, and most teams don't get it. The Yankees used 13 last year. The Red Sox and Rays each used 11. So, so when you're talking about, okay, your opening day rotation, but for most of these teams, and maybe for the Orioles this year, although hopefully not, you know, who's your 6th to 9th best starter is as much of an important consideration as who's your number 4 starter.
Yeah, and actually Britt Giroli today had an interesting article about Orioles like pitcher injury prevention programs that they've been implementing. And they actually, I think it was a pitcher on the 25-man roster hasn't had to have Tommy John surgery since Buck Showalter was the manager.
Knock on wood. I don't know if you can hear the knocking, but I'm knocking on my desk here. But no, because it's true, because, I mean, if you take out Dylan Bundy, it's really been a while. And Bundy, I have a feeling, suffered the significant damage when he was still in high school because, you know, his dad tied him to the tree. And that was, you know, that was the hardcore Oklahoma thing, you know, whatever that story was. I may not have that 100% right, but I vaguely recall hearing something about somehow his dad tied him to a tree and he was supposed to do something, and that was part of it. But then also his exercise regime was just flipping huge tires.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't do anymore, he said at FanFest, since the elbow surgery. But that was what he would do before. Just like monster truck tires, and he would just flip them over again and again.
Yeah, and high school pitchers are notorious for getting overused, so, you know. But yeah, so I mean, we'll see. Again, it's so hard to know. I mean, if you want to go by FIP or whatever, you know, they're probably likely to come crashing down back to earth.
But I mean, then last year they were like 26th by FIP or something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I don't like. I wrote that big long, the first article for Canada Chat was on Miguel Gonzalez and why sort of his peripheral stats don't mean as much to me as they would for another pitcher. And I think, you know, you can say about a lot of guys on the Orioles staff, like him and Chris Tillman are basically very similar, at least pitchers. And, you know, they both are able to produce outs in the same way. And they're sort of not picked up by the popular peripheral statistics. And so people just think that they suck.
Yeah. They're getting lucky. It's going to come crashing down this year. And I mean, it hasn't happened yet. And
I mean, they both have 500 innings, I think, of like pitching at the major league level at an above average rate. I mean, at what point is it no longer luck?
Right. Like Tillman has 2.5 full seasons of big league pitching now where he's looking good as far as his results. So, yeah, I think that is just about 500 innings.
Yeah.
And Gonzalez also has 2.5 full seasons pretty much because he came up in the middle of 2012 and did his thing, and he's been around pretty much the whole season every year since. So, I don't know. Maybe this year
again,
it stops
working
out for them if the defense isn't as good for some reason. But if that stays constant, they should still be able to pitch.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's reason to be concerned about pitchers like that because they can't fall back on striking people out. And so if they lose a touch off their fastball or lose a little break on their curve or something like that, you know, the results can go from good to awful pretty quickly.
Right. If there's one little edge that's keeping them afloat and if they somehow lose that edge, that would definitely be a problem. But they're not old, so
no.
You shouldn't worry about that as much. Like that was another thing I kind of was thinking about as you look ahead at this team. Like some teams, you say, well, they're all going to be a year older, and that's a bad thing because, you know, they're going to be 34 instead of 33 or something like that, or, you know, 37 instead of 36. But the Orioles are all young enough where they're all a year older. It really just means, well, you just have another year of experience.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of them are in that sort of prime age that getting older is a good thing.
I don't know who the oldest player is on 40-man off the top of my head, but I don't think there's anybody. Like, for instance, I there's nobody who was born in the 70s who's on the 40-man, I don't think.
I'm looking at it. I think it's maybe Steve Pierce. He's 32.
So, Hardy. It's not an old team.
Yeah. Hardy's probably the oldest sort of regular team dependent or whatever player.
Yeah, and he'll be 33.
Yeah.
So again, that's not old.
No.
Which is good because I'm going to be 32 this year. So if 33 is old, I'm in trouble. But, you know, baseball player years is a different story. But of course, that's bad for me because soon there will be no Orioles older than me. And then I will really feel old.
Yeah.
Eventually that will happen. I always remember a girl I dated a long time ago. Her stepdad was a big baseball fan, and he would always talk to me, and he'd be like, "Mark, the only guy older than me in baseball right now is Julio Franco. So I'm just really hoping he hangs on for a long time." And he did. So that was good. That was good for him. But
yeah.
I don't know that all of us are going to be so lucky.
No, you know. It's already weird for me just looking at people that are younger, and I'm only 25.
I go back a while ago, and I remember being surprised the first time the Orioles had a pitcher who was a starting pitcher who was younger than me, which if I'm remembering right, the first time that happened, it was Hayden Penn, who went on to such great glory.
Hayden Penn.
But, you know,
I remember getting really excited for one of Hayden Penn starts, and then he like came down with appendicitis.
Yeah, he had that bad luck for a couple years, because then the year after that, right, he got impaled by a bat shard in his thigh or something like that.
Jeez, I don't remember that. That's crazy.
Maybe I'm remembering that wrong, but there was some other weird
thing. You might
be right.
That was more my.
And he never got to make his chance.
Yeah, it was always something. But I'll remember that appendicitis one just because I remember being really excited to watch him pitch because, you know, hearing so much about him and then nope.
But then he got traded for Robert Andino, who gave us one of the greatest, well, probably the greatest Orioles moment of my life. Well, no, that's not true, because that's like Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's streak. But the greatest of the 21st century before 2012 was Andino beating the Red Sox in 2012. So Hayden Penn did give us some glory indirectly. So thank you for that, Hayden, wherever you are now. Yeah, I don't know how we've ended up on that tangent, but that's the fun of the podcast. But we're about out of time. So, Alex, if you were forced to make a prediction for how many wins the Orioles are going to end up with this year, putting you on the spot so I'm not the only one.
Sure.
Where are you feeling? And do you think they're going to make the playoffs at that record?
So you said 89, right?
I did. I'm sticking with 89.
89 is pretty good. Let's see. I'll say just to be different, I'll say 91.
Oh, you're going even higher than me.
Yeah. I don't really like the rest of the division all that much. I like what the Red Sox did, but I think their rotation isn't like particularly great.
I get a guy from Bovada who emails me odds sometimes. He emails like every SB Nation blog manager. And so the one he sent me a couple days ago, the AL East odds, Red Sox are the favorites at 2-1. Now, I know that's not saying, okay, the Vegas thinks that that's the chance, but that's because the Boston people will bet them, so they can bet them lower. But, man, you got to feel pretty good to put them at 2-1. Yeah. Like that, I mean, there's a lot more.
They were bad last year.
And they have, Rick Porcello could be another pretty good pitcher this year, but then they have, like, nobody. And,
And, the Yankees, we talked about their rotation, and all their position players are 33 probably plus. And then, I like what the Blue Jays did too, but their rotation is.
Yeah, you're the number one Russell Martin fan out there, as I recall.
Yeah.
Put some flack on that one on that site. Yeah.
I did not think that was such a controversial opinion, but oh well. But I like what they did with Donaldson and Martin, but their rotation's not very good, and they got six rookies starting right now.
And speaking of the Bovada and all that sort of stuff, the Orioles over-under for wins is 82.5.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously the people who set those things aren't broke for a reason. So there's obviously something that makes it that low for them. But, man, I look at that and I think that looks like free money.
Yeah, I agree.
It should make you nervous, I suppose, but because, again, they aren't broke. They avoid going broke for a reason. But there's, even if the Orioles don't win 89, there's a lot of scenarios where they can be above 82 and still be below 89, I certainly think they should be, like an 84 at a minimum.
Probably.
It would take a lot of disaster to go below that.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I think they have. I think they have as a team a relatively sort of high floor, if you want to call it that.
And I believe the World Series odds are 33-1.
Yeah.
Now that's probably flushing money down the toilet because it's just. Any one team probably isn't going to win, but man.
Yeah, it's hard. I would like to see how many like odds on favorites for the World Series have actually won it over the years. It's probably not very many.
I don't know either. Let's see. The favorites right now are the Nationals at 6-1.
That's not surprising.
Then the Dodgers at 17-2.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And the Bovada correspondent informs me that the most bets are coming in on the Dodgers and the Cubs. The Cubs at 16-1.
Yeah. Well, because, you just get every Chicago fan, this is going to be the year, and they bet they win the World Series.
I think the Cubs are another one of those teams they would call the public money or whatever.
Yeah, just drives down a line.
Probably Red Sox, Yankees, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so you're on board at 91.
Yeah,
so
I think 91 and a division winner again. I don't think the other teams in the division got that much better.
I think that puts us on 5 consecutive years where I'm the most pessimistic person to offer a prediction on Camden Cast preseason. So we didn't even plan that out, but that seems to have happened anyway.
Yeah.
So there we go. All
You think
right.
they're going to win the division?
I think they could. I don't know that they will.
Yeah.
I don't think 89 would do it, but they could win more than 89 and win the division.
Sure.
I mean, because like.
I guess that was my question, is do you think 89 will do it?
No,
Because I was trying to
I
think of
don't.
what number will do it.
I think 89 would be the road wild card if that's where they end up.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
they won the division by 12 games last year, which I continually forget and remember because it's just
Yeah.
so crazy that that happened.
Yeah, that's a lot of games.
So
I
as
mean,
I went on not to name drop or anything, but I got an opportunity to go on the Scott Garceau and Jeremy Kahn show
yeah.
a couple months ago. And so I one of the things I pointed out on there was the Orioles won the division by 12 games. So other teams need to get on the Orioles level. So when people were talking about, well, why didn't the Orioles do anything this offseason? Well, sure, you can't rest on your laurels, but other teams are the teams that need to improve to be what the Orioles were. The
Yeah.
Orioles don't need to be like, oh, well, we weren't good, so we need to do all these things. It's no, we were very good. How can we stay very good? Which is, you approach those two things differently, I think.
Agreed.
Okay, so that's all the time we have for tonight, but Alex will be joining me throughout the season, and I have failed in this promise before, but I will try and be a more active podcaster this season, 2015. It was a New Year's resolution as we struck into January, although I'm only getting started on it now, but I mean, come on. The Orioles didn't do anything, so there was nothing to say this offseason. So cut me a little slack out there. But I will try to not keep the fans of Camden Cast, however many they may be, waiting for too long this year. So thank you all for listening. Please be sure to follow Camden Chat on Twitter. It's at Camden Chat. And you can also like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/CamdenChat. I am the one who updates it, and I promise I am less annoying than the high school classmate you can't remember why you friended. Probably also less annoying than your aunt, if you have an aunt who's annoying on Facebook. Not that my aunt is annoying on Facebook, if she's listening. I'm not saying that. But if your aunt is annoying, Camden Chat's Facebook is less annoying than her. I promise. That is one vow I can make for you. So yeah, that's all the time we have for tonight. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We're bringing you Camden Cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.